vaccination is probably the most fundamental tool that we have in public health for disease prevention.
Many Americans have been focused on social distancing during the pandemic. But what they may not realize is that fear of one disease, coronavirus, could unintentionally lead to outbreaks of other previously eradicated or controlled diseases because people are staying home from doctor's offices and some children are missing important vaccines. In today's North Carolina Community Health Center Association podcast, I speak with Dr. Andreas Scholer about vaccines.
My name is Dr. Andrea Scholer. I am a pediatrician and a lead provider at Triad Adult and Pediatric Medicine, and we are a community health center, a federally qualified health center located at several sites. We have several offices in Greensboro. I happen to work at our office in High Point, North Carolina, and I have been a provider at Triad Adult and Pediatric Medicine for 16 years.
So I want to start by asking if you've actually seen a drop in your own vaccination rates at TAPM.
Yes. So our vaccination, and our organization, if we looked from the previous year, from March to July to this year, 2020, from March to July, we saw approximately, close to 50% reduction in our vaccination rate. And that actually reflects what other countries are seeing worldwide. Journal of Infectious Diseases in Children, they also published for 129 countries, 53% reduction in vaccination rates. So it's pretty consistent with what we're seeing all, throughout the world.
What was your first reaction when you saw that that was the case at your health center as well?
My reaction was, this is not good. Yes, this is a pandemic. And I understand we have a new virus on the scene. We are concerned about what this virus, its implications are. And we already know it can be deadly. We know in a higher risk group, but also it could be random and affect different people in different age groups also adversely. So, when you think about it, we really also just still need to keep consistent with what we have been doing all along.
We discussed the importance of a continuous relationship between provider and patient, but we also discussed the very real reasons people were not coming in.
Because of several factors. One is people are just afraid of catching the virus. We were still at the earlier part of the pandemic, learning about transmission and how, how exactly it was transmitted. And we've learned differently all along, whether to wear masks or not, and then what kind of masks. And then now we realize this could be more aerosolized than we thought previously. But anyway, working through all of that process, people were fearful for coming in to receive their healthcare. So the other concern was that providers couldn't even physically always be in the same clinic working at the same time because we are supposed to be also socially distancing from one another. So our provider team and staff had to be reduced, but also, the stay-at-home orders to not leave, made folks even less likely to come in and want to get their, routine well visits and vaccinations.
If you had just two or three takeaways to offer to them to improve their rates of people bringing children in for vaccinations.
I think, connecting with them first to and explaining to them the importance of them coming in and explaining what you're doing for safety measures in the clinic.
I asked Dr. Scholer what safety measures and changes had been enacted at Triad Adult and Pediatric Medicine. There are many.
Yeah, at the start of the pandemic, we divided our clinic day into the morning only for well visits. And then for the afternoon, we would see patients just with acute illness or even patients that we needed to have COVID testing. We also check temperatures of patients, a family member, and only one is really allowed to join the patient, but also staff, as actually we check, we have temperatures checked as well, just to make sure also the staff aren't coming in ill. Other things that we've done is going actually outdoors to see our patients. So we've gone to the, did the COVID testing just so they wouldn't need to come into the clinic and expose anyone else potentially. We've set up tents outside to see if we could even see patients in case of inclement weather. In addition to that, so the clinics have designated isolation rooms at each of our sites. So they're a little more, you know, away from the other patient rooms. And we would allot one or two of those just to see patients if we determine they have symptoms of being ill. We see them in that room. After they're seen, we let the rooms, you know, we clean it, of course, and then let it sit for 2 hours before allowing another person to come in. We clean, you know, not only like we always did between patients, but after the morning session, we'll clean everything and then, you know, before even having the afternoon session begin.
So it's important to communicate protocols like cleaning, separating well and sick visits, and how your community health center is using personal protective equipment. But I also wanted to know, in the chaos of the beginning of the pandemic, what Triad Adult and Pediatric Medicine did immediately.
You know, we did seek guidance as much as we could from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. The American Academy of Pediatrics also was giving us a lot of guidance as well. But again, this was coming, you know, in waves as they were also getting the information and processing everything themselves. So the first changes we made were really limiting our well child visits to 6 months and under, because this is an age group where there is more frequent vaccinations being given. You give it at birth, 2, 4, and 6 months as their first set of immunizations. So we really wanted those babies to come in and get that first established set of protection. And then as the pandemic unfolded a little further, that was extended to allow 12 months and under, because 12 months is another pivotal time where they receive their first, for example, measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella vaccines. Those are the first ones given at a year. Following months during the pandemic, probably around late spring, the AAP guidelines, American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines, extended that even more to 2 years and under. Because also, we don't not only want to keep up with their vaccinations, but we want to follow their development so closely and make sure we're not missing important milestones and things that they might be needing intervention with during this very critical time. So, so there is an additional challenge there too. And then all the while, we're trying to combat these fears that families just, you know, genuinely had and knew that they needed to bring their children in, but were afraid to.
All of these changes are important and useful, but I wondered how community health centers like Triad Adult and Pediatric Medicine are getting the word out when the whole problem is that people are avoiding doctors' offices.
Those that come in that would be willing to come into the clinic in person, we really just try to, you know, emphasize everything that we had been doing previously. And then we, of course, add in the anticipatory guidance related to COVID, to keep themselves safe. That's sort of an additional factor into their, you know, what we provide for guidance. But we wanted to encourage as much as possible, anytime any of our patients were in the building for any reason even, and if we saw that they were due for vaccinations, we tried to get them right there, as long as there weren't any other extenuating factors, you know, preventing them from getting them. If they're severely ill or anything like that, we still wanted to keep them on track. And then even for those babies who came in, we would say, okay, your next appointment is in 2 months, you know, so let's go ahead and make that appointment, you know, let's keep them on schedule. So we emphasize that. So those were the persons that we would see in person. Now, telehealth, as you probably are aware, is one of the, what arose from COVID. And we use telehealth for, you know, for sick visits, but also for well child visits. We were allowed to use it, and you wonder, how are you going to do a well child visit virtually? Well, you could use that time to discuss all, you know, everything else related to their chronic conditions, you know, any health issues, any developmental concerns you address at that time. You also provide the anticipatory guidance for vaccines and explain, this is why we're giving them, this is what we need to do. So now let's bring your child in to get those vaccines done. So telehealth actually was very helpful. It still is extremely helpful for us to remain connected to our families, because also the provider-patient bond is so important to keep. And that is also who your patients are really going to for their information and for their sense of security. So if the provider is saying to them, look, you know, we have this pandemic going on. If the providers can explain, this is how we prevent you from, you know, our measures that we take to prevent getting COVID. This is what we're trying to do to make it safe for you to come in to our clinic and have your child just still stay on track with their schedule for their well visits and vaccines.
So did you find, either anecdotally or with actual data, did you find that people that had telehealth visits were more likely to then come in for vaccinations than people who you just didn't see and didn't talk to?
I think there has always been a subset of families that just wanted to still come in no matter what. It was much smaller.
Yeah.
But I think anecdotally, I can say that the more families I spoke to in person, that I could explain to them what we were doing, what measures we were taking to keep them safe and our staff safe, the more they felt secure to come in and still receive their routine care. There were also still, and are still, some families that are still just fine with telehealth for now for their needs, you know, and nothing, you know, if there is something that they just can't, we just can't see them, you know, on telehealth for, and we really need to come in for them to come in, they will, you know, with us talking to them and explaining it, they will come in. But it, so it does serve as, it did serve, it does serve as a very important role for communication and to keep that bond strong between this, the provider and the patient.
You're kind of going over what HRSA suggests you do, which obviously, you know, communicating directly with families and explaining specifically your risk reduction strategies. And it sounds like it's really effective one-on-one. Have you done any attempts to communicate, you know, one-to-many, where either you're putting out a radio ad or even putting something on social media? Have you done any kind of mass communications efforts?
We are still putting out messages on our website. We actually utilized a lot of our staff during this time. You know, when providers, you know, when you think about it, if providers are doing telehealth, what are the ancillary staff doing? Like the nurse assistants and nursing staff, right? Because they're not seeing patients in the clinic as much. So a lot of our ancillary staff actually helped us quite a bit in identifying the patients who were behind or were due for their immunizations or behind on their immunizations, or, you know, were needing a follow-up visit, never got their follow-up visit for whatever medical concern that they had. For instance, like say for a high blood pressure check for them to come back in, or so they were targeting, you know, a lot of the kids that were due to come in for various reasons, but also the ones that were needing their immunizations as well. So we became very proactive as a team to get these patients in. And when the nursing staff would explain that to the parent, you know, they would be very receptive to it. There were occasions where it would be more helpful if the provider actually met with them first by a telehealth visit and then, you know, discussed what we were doing and then brought them in. So it was more, not so much a, like really we had to do our own work to look and looked very carefully and deliberately, you know, who was in need and to prioritize who needed to come in first and then go from there.
What will happen if kids don't get their vaccinations?
Well, I mean, you could think about it. Like, here we are having had decades now of us providing routine immunizations, and these are for preventable diseases. So, I mean, really, vaccination is probably the most fundamental tool that we have in public health for disease prevention. So if we disrupt our immunization process, what, you know, due to COVID-19, we are going to, you know, potentially see undoing of all those decades of work we did to try to get these, you know, diseases at bay. We might see instead a resurgence of them.